This is Geek Speak, episode 22 of our 16th season. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm Lyle Troxell, and with me in the studio is Brian Young. He's an iOS developer, designer, and software conference producer. Hey, Brian.
Hey, how you doing, Lyle?
I'm well. Very well. Thank you for being here today.
Yeah.
And we also have Al Luckow, new media architect. Hi, Al.
Hello, everybody.
Al, thanks for providing the studio in Ben Lomond.
Yes. Very fancy, very luxurious.
Yes, definitely.
Very high tech, a lot of weird things around us right now.
We just spent some time with Kenny Hill, a guitar maker in town, friend of my father's and mother's, and we had an amazing experience touring his whole facility and talking about guitar making, which was so friggin' cool. I can't even tell you.
It was amazing.
It really was.
I mean, I just want to go back there and smell all that wood again.
The wood room was great. Yeah. He had a humidifier, like cargo size room, you know, like from a truck. And he had all this wood stacked. It was
all
amazing.
Different kinds of exotic. Well, they weren't exotic woods. They're guitar woods.
Yeah.
And they're all exotic. Kind of exotic. Yeah.
So we took photographs and recorded the entire thing. It was about 2 hours of time, and it was fantastic. We had to figure out what to do with it. We'll probably put it on GeekSpeak at some point.
So these are all acoustic guitars, or was he doing...
Yeah, he does classical.
They're all classical guitars. Yeah.
Classical.
The Hill guitar.
Yeah.
World famous. And they're just right down... You just drove right by them.
So what I don't understand is guitars have been made for ages, and yet it seems like it's made out of plywood on the surface, or...
Well, there's solid type, and there's a core type. And
I guess I'll have to see that. There's all sorts of stuff going into there. Different kinds of glues and, you know, veneers and stuff.
So, you know, with this new era of GeekSpeak not being a radio show, we have opened all these new possibilities. So it might be that you'll be listening to a whole discussion about guitar making.
Well, I mean, it is seriously geeking out in guitar making.
God,
and, you know, the thing is, you know, if you're listening to this and you've listened to the show, you have an idea for something, you know, send it in. You know, email us. And, you know, geeks are really, really into a particular subject. They're, you know, experts on certain things. They're, you know, could some say obsessed? but it really isn't necessarily. I mean, we know that everybody out there listening to us is not a programmer.
Speaking of contacting us and providing input, we talked a while ago about games and wishing that, like, games like Battlefield was more accurate to history, because since we're consuming so much game media now, wouldn't it be really cool if those games taught us about the world, especially if it's like theoretically a World War One simulation system? And we got a great call, email back from Rob Squared. That's his handle.
Excellent.
Little, you know, Superscript 2.
Maybe he's Rob.
Maybe. Could be Rob. So games that, let's see, he says, and I'm just going to kind of quote a few of his sentences.
Roberts.
When you
I
guys
bet he's
mentioned,
Bob Roberts.
He probably is, yeah. When you guys mentioned Battlefield 1 and the wish for more historic gaming, quality, and accuracy, I couldn't help myself. I've learned so much about medieval history because of the game called Crusader Kings 2. The company Paradox makes many other great games that have historical accuracy, especially their flagship Europa Universalis 4. It's a Renaissance period game. And he also mentions Hearts of Iron 4. And Hearts of Iron 4 is particularly historically accurate, with each country having its own troops, vehicles, and both look and function, researched trees, political doctrines, and so on. So, Rob Squared, thank you for the recommendations for historically accurate games.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
Anytime you want to participate in the show by suggesting improvements or corrections, we take those things at geeks@geekspeak.org is our email address. And you can find us on social media as such. All right. We are sitting around here with brand new devices. I don't have a power supply for my laptop, but you're sitting here with a beautiful new laptop, and you're using an iPad. But these things are going to age out and become useless relatively soon, right,
Al? Oh, yeah. 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 As a matter of fact, you probably got an old iPod kicking around somewhere, right?
An iPod?
iPod.
Yeah. I think my first iPod actually was like one of those little tiny ones.
The little...
With the wheel and the really, really
the wheel,
thin
wheel, you spun the wheel and then you clicked and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but not the hard drive ones. The really thin, thin ones, but yeah.
Wait, so it wasn't the one with the real wheel.
It was a fake wheel, but it felt like a wheel.
Oh, I had the one with the real wheel.
The real
wheel.
That's hard to say.
Yeah. Well,
the original iPod.
Like baseball cards and Beanie Babies, the old technology, Apple stuff, at least, is going for big bucks on eBay right now. This is a story that I read about in The Guardian, and San Francisco Guardian. what, you know, you're always seeing things like Star Wars figurines and things like that going for a lot of money. But did you know that a factory sealed third generation iPod Shuffle is going for $1,000?
Whoa,
really?
A mint condition fifth generation iPod Classic in white, $1,394.99.
Wait. Why are people spending this much?
This is what people are buying stuff on eBay for a silver generation iPod Mini, $2,000.
Wait, no. That's iPod Mini. That's not even the hard drivers. Now, I would understand if somebody had a working hard drive version of the iPod saying, okay, this is worth some real money because you're never going to see this thing again.
Well, I know you're crazy. You think this is crazy. No, you are crazy, but that's not what I mean. I mean, this is crazy. But those were the low-end prices.
Okay.
So the real, if you really want to make something, make some money out of this, you got to get the real collector's item, which would be... stuff that's a special edition, and especially if it's in the original packaging. Apple's fourth generation red and black special edition released in partnership with the band U2 iPods are trading for about $7,000.
What?
Well, that's in the package.
I don't have the in the package one, but the red one is the one I've got.
Right. It's a, yeah. And this is the when you're really going for it.
Wait a second. Why are people doing this? I mean, what's like, is it because it sounds better, like vinyl or something?
No, they're going for it for the collect. I mean, why are people buying Star Wars figurines inside their original packaging? I mean, this has to do with, you know, you got to be in the package.
Yeah, but Al, Star Wars.
Well, yeah, I know. I understand Star Wars, but I'm just saying. I'm just trying to be, I'm just looking at ridiculous things here.
I understand.
And the most expensive one, a second generation still boxed iPod Classic. That's the last version that had the moving wheel is currently listed for $19,000.
Listed for that or selling for that?
Wait a second. That wasn't the buy it now price, was it?
That's amazing.
Though. Rare vintage.
Well, that's the one.
No, that's the buy it now, $19,999. Oh, yeah. Okay. And there's 80 people watching this.
No,
and
there's one day nobody's going to bid on that. Okay.
Well, we'll see. You know, I mean, this is.
Well, just to flip that on his head, I was looking today. So my kids, my daughter is going to have some sort of Chromebook-like device for school next year.
Right.
Yeah, so I was looking
in California, baby.
I know. So yeah. I was looking to see. Well, okay, what's a Chromebook look like? What is it on Amazon? And there, at the bottom of the listings, was a PowerPC iBook white version on Amazon, available boxed new for $61.
Selling as a Chromebook? That's not a Chromebook.
I know, but it was for some reason it came up in the Chromebook listings. It was just bizarre. But
I don't think that would actually work for Google software. What OS is that stuck on?
It wouldn't go past what? 10.5?
10.3 maybe?
10.3? Yeah. I went up to 10.5.
Right. There's people selling collection. I mean, I'm looking here. There's even more examples. People selling a collection of things. A fully boxed set of the three memory-sized options for the first generation iPod. It's listed for $50,000. And you can get, you know, so basically people are collecting the set and then selling the whole set.
I have a Google Glass first edition available. Anyone?
It's not a first edition. You trade it up to the second edition.
That's true, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, I mean, you kind of wonder, you know, I think I gave away my old I mean, I just give away things.
Oh, sure.
You know, and
half
you wonder
the stuff I own. You gave to me.
Is someday is that going to be valuable? You know, I mean, my what was that MP3 player that came out before the iPod? That was the Rio.
Oh yeah,
Diamond sure. Rio. Remember the Diamond Rio?
You had one of those.
I had one of those.
That's worth $80,000.
Yeah, I mean that. I really like that thing.
No, I don't like this at all because you have to leave it in the box. It has to be a brand new, unopened.
You guys don't
version.
Just well, every time you buy new hardware, you don't buy two of them. One is a shelf and one. For the
well, maybe you just had it. You had them, or maybe you just took it out of the box and you used it, but you still had all the stuff. Some people keep the Apple packaging is really kind of nice, and you feel bad throwing it out. You know,
Al has boxes and boxes of packaging.
You know what? I can get rid of them anytime I want. I could just go right up there right now and just throw them out. I wouldn't even bother me. I'm not gonna, but if I wanted to.
Hey, last week we covered the Oracle case, the Google versus Oracle case about Android potentially copyright infringing Oracle's claim to Java API. We talked a lot about that and how ridiculous that was and how we didn't like that. Well, the court case that was up for debate, the jury sided with the geeks.
Amazingly enough. Yeah. I mean, so this has gone back and forth where a judge first ruled in Google's favor, and then a court ruled in Oracle's favor. Yeah, it went back and forth. So the fact that a jury was able to come up with this verdict, I'm really impressed.
So the Google has been found, quote, innocent of the charges, with the jury deciding that the use of the Java of Java by Google was one which was of fair use. And then, of course, Oracle said, yeah, but we strongly believe that Google developed Android by illegally copying core Java technology to rush into the mobile device market. So they're, of course, going to, unfortunately, seek a higher court of appeal and move this case along. But it is a good sign that people can actually understand pretty complicated problems set forth for them. So I'm happy with the case, obviously. Brian, I know I've kind of put you on the spot by inviting you very late to today's episode of GeekSpeak. Thank you for coming. We, of course, thought that our entire discussion with Kenny Hill would be this week's episode, but we need a lot of editing time. So we pulled together our last-minute show, so thanks for being here.
Well, I'm always glad to be here. It's always fun. I actually do better when I have nothing to talk about, and I can just listen and pipe up.
It was also good that you told him he was supposed to, we're coming over here to play pool.
Yeah, tricked him there, too.
And then when he saw the mics and stuff.
And then I said, you didn't bring your laptop?
Yeah.
So you got anything interesting to bring up today?
Okay, well here's the thing. After all these years we've been doing GeekSpeak, and I've been involved in it more than ever in this last year, I'm realizing how I am actually becoming a lot less, a lot more one-dimensional as I've dived into my programming career. Mm-hmm. So now all I want to do is just talk about how to organize code and algorithms and what's the right protocol to use.
It is so funny because, whenever we're in Los Gatos and you drive me home afterwards, we get deep into code. And I think, God, we really should do a podcast about coding iOS.
Oh, yeah. That would be riveting. Yeah. That would be absolutely riveting.
There are people out there. We listen to them. actually, there's a few podcasts that do talk about that. Let's see. Debug is a good podcast.
Right? Yeah, that dives in pretty deep. I enjoy listening to Corinth, a good one for any of the old-time Mac guys that like to talk about programming. And there's a bunch of new ones related around Swift now that are diving into it. But talking about code on a podcast it's not a great way to learn.
No.
Or a great way to talk about it. But talking about concepts.
YouTube videos.
Talking about the concept. Actually, I've now subscribed to a Twitch channel that's live coding.
Who's live coding on Twitch? Twitch, of course, is traditionally a video streaming live thing for games, for people to watch people play games, which sounds as stupid as it is. No,
that's what do you mean? All of our kids are entirely wrapped up in this.
Yeah, but our kids are wrong, just like we were wrong with our children.
Wait. You sat around watching old 60s cartoons all your childhood like me, right?
It is kind of funny though. I mean, all of our kids actually enjoy watching other people play video games, right?
Well, they have a running commentary, and the guy's like, "Oh, what am I doing running here? Oh, look at that guy! I've got the diamond sword. Kill that guy!" You know, and they're just
Minecraft.
They think it's hilarious, yeah. And they can watch it for hours. And I'm just like, am I becoming my dad?
Yes.
You know, because I can't even try to I'm like that uncool.
Yeah, no, we all are. I mean, the thing is, the whole generation's doing this, and I do not, I can't get into it.
It just slipped past us.
Brian, so you're saying that you're doing that, but for people live coding.
Oh,
this is real time, not even sped up.
No. And the thing is, I can't just sit and watch it. Just like I can't listen to a podcast at normal speed. I'm now minimum 1.5 speed. So it's just glancing at it. Oh, can I understand that? Is it useful? Is that interesting?
Yeah,
now I'll go back to what I was doing.
That's pretty cool. Are we moving on?
Yes, we're moving on. I'm going to pipe up with other things.
Well, I'm always excited when we have Al on because we talk about, he's a designer, so he knows all about fonts. We had a whole show. Last time you were on, we talked a lot about street sign fonts. I found it fascinating. Yep. So I was going to put you on the spot and ask for another font story, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm always into a font story. What was the joke earlier today before we started when we were setting up here?
About fonts?
Yeah. He said our it was going to be fantastic.
Oh God, did I say that?
Yeah, he actually said that, and I still feel a little bit icky.
Dirty. Yeah.
The National Weather Service has officially, after many decades, decided to stop shouting at us in all caps.
That's It's great.
Now, you think it's, if you've ever looked at one of the weather reports, or even if you have a weather app and you say, oh, tell me more, and then you get it, and then everything's in all caps, you know, and it's going to be sunny today, and there's going to be no precipitation.
Stop. We have a rule with our audience. We don't yell at them.
It's
and
true.
It's like, so first off, all caps means yelling.
Pretty much.
Okay, we assume that mm-hmm. everyone knows this. Yep. I'm hoping everyone knows this. And yeah, weather reports, especially when with the radio station, we have to read the radio station. They're always full uppercase. Yeah. And the thing is, the other about that, it's really hard to read that.
Oh, it's hard to read. And I'll tell you the reason they do it is there was a point in time when computers did not exist.
No,
there wasn't. People used these things called typewriters.
Oh, yeah, I know about those.
And they had caps and lowercase.
Wait. I remember you could backspace and do it again, and you could make bold.
Yeah, I think you could do that. You'd have to type exactly what you type. But this is kind of, it's left over from those days as you know, that's all the only choice they had. And so, you know, we look at it, and it's harder to read in all caps, a full page of all caps. That's one thing. And then it also lowers your sensitivity to anything that might be important, because now all of a sudden it's in all caps.
Right.
And everything's in all caps, so nothing's important.
Like, you don't listen to yelling people.
Right. When I was designing ads, you would talk to the customer, and they I was working at a newspaper, and they'd want their ad in. Oh, I want everything in all caps. You know, and I'm like, well, you know, if you put everything in all caps, you might as well not have anything in caps.
Right.
Because you need to have...
The thing that I have always been aware of is that when you read a word, you don't actually look at all the letters. You look at the shape of the word, and that word, if you know it well, mm-hmm. goes in your mind. Mm-hmm. So the word the, you know, you can read the without even noticing mm-hmm. that you've read it.
Right.
And that's because of the shape. Mm-hmm. So when you make it all uppercase, it's really hard to detect that shape.
Oh, yeah. There's other things that use all caps.
Yeah. So if you want to make sure that nobody reads it, you just put it in all caps. And that'd be great if you had something you really didn't want to talk about. Like if you're a cigarette manufacturer and you don't want to put that warning on your cigarette pack, maybe you put that in all caps.
That is totally in all caps on cigarettes. Is that true?
That's really true. That's one of the things, yeah.
That's really why they mm-hmm. do that.
Oh, yeah.
So you don't read it?
Yeah. It was an example the infamous, the genius Edward Tuff. He's the guy that he's written a book called Visual Explanations and much of other books. He's
Visual Explanations.
Tuft. And it's one of his examples as this is basically what they did was they made everything in all caps and underlined it. So it's like completely forgettable.
Surgeon General warning.
Yeah, it's a Surgeon General warning, yeah.
And you're showing this. The other thing that's notable is this really bold border right around it. Mm-hmm. So all you're really looking at is this bold box with just some lines in it that don't make any sense.
Yeah. And you'll also see all caps in a disclaimer, like warranties and things like that. You'll see everything in all caps.
Now, this one was interesting because... this is legally mandated because anything that, because of a style guide for legal pros, it demanded that it be emphasized because this is important stuff, this fine print.
Those rules were written before we had caps or had the ability to use caps or bold or italics or anything from a typewriter. You couldn't highlight anything. You couldn't do anything. And that's what these are all throwbacks from. And at least we have entity, the Weather Service now is just starting to see the light I'm going to go UNLC and make it so that I can read it really easily and, you know, people can understand. And then if there is a tornado warning, you know, they can put that in uppercase and whoa, you know.
Well, you know, speaking of fonts and signs, the thing that irritates me the most, and I see this all the time, and when I see it, I actually get angry, and that is that people will take domain names mm-hmm. that are multiple words. Little Fish Company. Okay, mm-hmm. So this is the name of the pet store, Little Fish Company. And they'll make the domain littlefishcompany.com. They will do it all lowercase with a www in front of it, all one word. It's extremely hard to read.
So wait, mm-hmm. do you want to go on a mission here and teach the world camel case?
Yes. Why do people not camel case? It's so frustrating. And it's like people are scared of domain names. Like they know that domain name works and therefore they copy it and they keep it precious like a little baby and then they put it in their pros and they don't change it at all. And no one knows that it doesn't matter.
Do you still run into people that ask whether case is important with email?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like writing their email address down and then, no, you got to capitalize that.
Oh, man, So Al, as a designer, I urge you, when people have concatenated names in one word, please have camel case be there.
Oh, yes.
It's crucial.
Well, we need to start changing these rules. We need to start, updating our antiquated typographic things. People need to start understanding that we do have other options now.
Absolutely.
We can do other things.
Yes. The desktop revolution, or the desktop publishing revolution, was only, 20 years ago?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, last week, I asked people to participate in Patreon. We have a Patreon page. You can find out more by going to geekspeak.org/support. We've already had six people who contributed monthly to the program. And I want to thank Chris Irwin and John Winston for ponying up money every month to make GeekSpeak happen. Thank you so much.
It's really incredible. Was it, you said Chris Irwin?
Yeah, Chris Irwin.
Yeah, he was the one that kind of got the ball rolling, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was looking for a way to support us before we even announced it.
Yeah, Chris sent us a note saying, well, it's great that you're going to keep going the show. The only reason I was supporting you before, or the only way I was supporting you before was supporting KOSP. I never listened to anything on KOSP except for you guys, so I want to give you money. And I was like, oh, I think we can do that. So I heard of technology and things like that.
Apparently people are doing that
now. So not only is Chris one of our largest contributors, he actually set the page up. And relatively soon I'll be inviting him, because he's contributed at a wonderful level. I'll be inviting him to listen to us live. We actually record the show on Monday evenings. So yeah, that's the perk if you go a higher level. But at any level, we'd appreciate your patronage. It would be a wonderful support for us. We'll be using that money for bandwidth support for our hosting facilities and also marketing, so we can share and spread the word. Find out more by going to geekspeak.org/support. If you don't want to contribute financially, we totally understand. Go write a review on iTunes and tell people how wonderful it is. Or better yet, get a few people that you know might like the show to listen in. We'd love to grow the audience. All right, let's pop back into the flow. Let's talk about patents.
Sometimes when you have do you have a patent?
No.
Oh. Do you have a patent?
Hey, I do have any? Well, I have a couple patents, actually.
You do?
Yeah, there's one on the wall right there, that one. And then I think
that? What's that patent for?
That's for the visual design of the Kerbango radio, but then I'm listed on a couple others for Sleep IQ stuff.
Cool.
It's just honorary, really. Kind of dumb. You don't make any money from it. Anyway, speaking of patents, of course, when you have a bit of a slow news day, you go and look at what new patents people are filing and try to generate some kind of news, which is what this is. Somebody found a patent Apple just filed for smart walkie-talkie lightning headphones.
Wait, this is Apple?
This is an Apple patent, yeah.
Apple, like all the big companies, files patents left and right, mm-hmm. things that may or may not ever become a product. In fact, I guess the thing to say about Apple patents is usually it's not going to be a product, because they're not going to pre-announce something this way.
Well, a lot of the patents are just, you can't even understand what the heck they're patenting. But this one, it's pretty decent. It's got a picture of headphones.
You say walkie-talkie, do you mean like traditional walkie-talkie?
Well, what they want to do is they want to, they patented a way that you can use an ad hoc network, mm-hmm. which is a network that you just generate from within one small area. And it allows communication between people within that network. So say you have a Wi-Fi zone or a Bluetooth area or something like that.
This is how AirPlay? And you share files through.
Yeah. Yeah, AirPlay kind of does that.
It has to have a... you're talking the file sharing?
Yeah. You don't have to use a shared network. It's Bluetooth, I think.
It uses Bluetooth to set the connection up, right. And then it uses the Wi-Fi network. So it's got to have a Wi-Fi network, not like mesh networking, which is making an ad hoc network.
Okay. Anyway, you're talking about AirDrop.
Yeah.
They're basically just saying, we want to do something where the device that you buy, you can use as a communication device to others near you.
So this would be awesome, because up here in the mountains, especially at my kids' school, I don't get signal. Mm-hmm. But if we were able to do this, some sort of mesh network, ad hoc networking, mm-hmm. to talk to everybody, that'd be fantastic.
Oh, yeah. For the three times a year that we're at the school trying to find each other or our kids.
No. I mean, it happens all the time.
It totally happens. I mean, the last time we were at a school event, one of the kids was gone. I think your son was gone.
Right.
We had to find them.
Well, my daughter was found crying in the classroom. So it would have been nice to send a message to somebody that way.
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think that also the cool thing is if it's like a one-to-many where, you know, if you have a group of people, you could have a dance party, one person playing music, everyone listening on their own. Like, earbuds.
Yeah. Okay. I
mean, now, cool stuff on this.
Now that gets to something I've always wanted. I've been trying to figure out how to make this for 20 years. I want to be able to talk to that car that just cut me off car sitting at the intersection and tell them that their blinker's still on and they're turning in the wrong direction or whatever.
So when I was in college, I did electronics engineering. And one of the things that I learned in that time, and right after when I went to broadcast, I worked at a broadcast company, Inovonics Inc., is that you can take ultrasonic speakers and play ultrasonic sound on it that you can't hear, and then have the two speakers cancel each other so that the ultrasonic sound is canceled and the second audio signal that you put on one of them is then relieved. So this is how those really strong battleship speaker systems mm-hmm. work, where you can aim sound somewhere, and how those directional speakers work in like museums and stuff, where you walk into a space and you can actually hear it. The bones in your head are getting hit by ultrasonic and then canceling each other out, and then you hear it. So I wanted to make one of these for the top of my car so I could spot other cars and talk to them.
Oh, man.
It would be awesome,
That'd
right?
be really neat.
You can actually buy these things. They're commercial now. I bought panels when I was working at the arts program where you couldn't hear it from 2 feet away. You got it in it. You could hear it, and it was really
loud.
Does
it go through glass? Or
no, it bounces. It has to bounce off a hard surface. So when you walk into it, it actually is hitting. It's vibrating your bone.
Wow.
So wait, you can't hear it from like a foot away.
Are you saying the ultrasonic sound would hit like the windshield of the other car, and that would become the speaker for in there?
Effectively, that would happen.
So once we all have heads-up displays in our cars, and we can like tap on that one car that's sitting over there, and then you have a tracking mechanism. It's highly directional, right?
It is pretty directional, yeah.
Yeah. That would be awesome.
It'd be awesome. It's also illegal to do that because
and then people would be yelling at each other, and we would hear somebody
hey, shut up. fights ensue.
Well, good. It's probably coming. I mean,
no. I think we're gonna all be just sitting in self-driving cars before that point.
Let's hope so.
Yeah.
Are you guys thumbs up on self-driving cars? Are you happy about that?
You know, I hear a lot of people talking about how it's way further off than we think, and I sure hope not. I'm
I don't
all
think
for
it. I think it's gonna be quick.
I think so too.
I mean, what's going to happen, of course, is it's going to... New cars are bought all the time, and the technology become cheap enough where it's just part of the new cars. So it's just going to happen.
I'm in the camp that kind of...
You like driving.
Did you...
What?
Highly distractible?
I just nodded my head and pointed over to the wall to get Lyle to think there's something over there.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. How often... Does that kind of thing happen, like when you're at a stoplight or a stop sign, and you see the other person, and the other person just it's like they look at you a certain way, and you're like, oh, that guy wants me to go, or he's saying you go, and then you nod your head and you say no, you go, and you know, there's all this communication that goes on visually between humans
at low speed. At high speed, none of that happens.
No.
At low speed, it happens.
It's just
low speed, people don't die.
I just feel like there's a lot of that goes on. And with a self-driving car, how is it going to know, you know, that dog right there is acting crazy and it's going to jump in the road?
Okay.
Or this bicycle that I've been following, he swerves like every couple of minutes. And I know that I'm going to drive way over to the left because that guy is going to, it's called defensive driving. Mm-hmm. You know, how is
okay, Brian, you want to take
You're totally wrong, Al. You're absolutely wrong. that whole thing of two people looking at each other in the car goes the other way too. Two people sit there and like, you give them a look, the other guy's confused, and they kind of creeps out, and then the other one stops, and then starts to creep out, and then before you know it, there's
Wait,
a third car
that's
just
in a movie, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, I just think there's a thing that humans do that I don't think, I don't think it's there yet. I mean, I've seen these cars driving around. I think freeways and stuff, maybe that can happen. You know, in areas that are designated as, you know.
I'm more optimistic about technology. Mm-hmm. I would say that I think that they're gonna make self-driving cars better than humans, and that will happen within the next 5 years. I mean, I think it's already happened, right? Mm-hmm. Already there's vehicles that are driving better than humans. They have a better track record.
Well,
the question is how fast they can come into play.
Right.
You're right that in some areas it's a little strange. Like when you visit my house, if you don't know how to slow down correctly and you run over a chicken or something, like it's going to be a different environment.
I mean, your speed limit is 3.14.
And if a car sees that, it might try to finish that and it would last forever.
Yeah, I know.
I really should just put the symbol for pi there.
Yeah.
And then self-driving cars will just stop. because they won't be able to achieve right. that speed. My speed limit on my property is 3.14. It's a reference to please slow down, but it's a memorable number. Everybody seems to remember that.
Yeah.
You know that that sign's not finished, Al? My intention is you see the 3.14 when you drive in. But then when you're driving out, I've always intended to have the rest of it digits just going off into the woods. I just haven't done it.
Well, you could have made it a circle sign, too.
Oh, I didn't make it a circle.
Oh, no, now
he's going to start over again. You're the first person that's ever said that.
Well, it's something I've been thinking about. Didn't mean to tell you on
that. You know, I made that sign by typing that on a computer in Photoshop, whatever, and projecting it onto the sign and then painting it from the projection.
Well, that makes up for it. That's pretty cool.
So I used some geekiness to do that.
That's funny because I had to hang these pictures at work, and they had to be they're all squares, and they're five squares, and they had to be evenly spaced. Mm-hmm. And we started to draw it out on the wall, and I got really frustrated. Like, no, where's the projector?
Yes, could have done it.
No, I totally did it. Oh, I did it in Illustrator, projected the squares, just a breeze.
Wait, is that being done by people that hang pictures a lot? That makes a lot of
sense. It should be, because I started with wondering, is there a laser level? Does somebody have a laser level? I need something to project a line out there. Yeah. And that's when I came to the projector idea.
Yeah, projectors. Of course, if it's askew at all, because the projector is not projecting flat.
Yeah.
You could have like a curve, and then you're like bending the material out. Hey, Al, let's talk about wearable technologies, shall we?
I don't understand.
Oh.
Wearable technology?
Oh, if I had one of these in my ear, I'd understand you because I.
Why?
Well, there's a company, okay, and it's called. It's got a weird name. It's called
Waverly Labs.
Waverly Labs, but the product is something else. Anyway, it's a universal translator that goes in your ear. That
no, it isn't.
That it's just
is
like
it
on Star Trek.
Babelfish?
It's not called Babelfish, which.
Should
obviously,
be.
It would be a great name for it. But didn't Yahoo do a translation?
Yeah, Babel is normally used a lot, yeah.
And of course the book, you know, Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy uses it. But this thing, it comes in three colors, that much I know. It's an Indiegogo.
Oh, so they're trying to get funding for it.
Yes, but cool. apparently have the thing. And you can see pictures of it, and you can see their circuit boards.
You know that Google Glass does this on the fly, right?
That's with text. This is listening. This is like start. I mean,
exactly
this is like
what you want.
This is like what the TARDIS does
nice.
For Doctor Who.
Ooh.
You know, when he goes somewhere, it automatically translates for
him.
Are they
calling the TARDIS talk?
The TARDIS
trademark.
Talk
too.
Trademark.
They say that it's called the Pilot. Pilot.
All right, that's okay name.
I think I might have heard that name before. Yeah. And it's going to be delivered in May 2017. And the languages that will translate back and forth are English, Spanish, French, Italian, and Portuguese.
Nice.
So, wait.
And then they're going to introduce new languages in the fall of 2017, which will be available for download, including Germanic, Hebrew, Arabic, Russian, and Slavic, East Asian, and African languages. Now, you know, I got to see, you know, if this actually works.
It's time to travel.
I'm just imagining a conversation. So first of all, there's somebody speaking to me in a language I don't understand. Second of all, I'm listening to, remember the process of this. This is taking speech to text. Mm-hmm. Then they do a translation on that text and then they speak it back to your ear. So, I mean, you've used Google Translate. That has tons of problems with it.
Have you ever used the Skype version? You know, Skype does this.
Skype does
it? Oh, does it?
Yeah, you can actually get... a plugin.
Is it any good?
It actually works. I know people that use it to communicate with other people, you know, like a French speaker. You can talk and then they can talk.
And it translates both directions.
Yes.
Pretty cool.
But that's, you know, you're talking, you know, computer hardware and there's a little bit of a difference, you know,
talking
you have
about
that
like kind of ear aid thing.
And this thing goes in your ear. It looks like a Bluetooth earpiece and it says it's going for $199 because I can talk about prices now, right?
Well, you sure can. We're not in non-profit organization.
Yeah, right? Not NPR anymore. So... it's $199, and that's, you know, that's the Indiegogo, you know, supporter price, and that's what it says. You get one mobile app and one portable charger, and it's the full Pilot system of two earpieces. I guess you got to put two in.
Awesome. No, that's cool. Yeah. So you give the earpiece to the stranger behind the counter, and they stick it in their ear, and then you stick one in your ear, and then both sides are translated. No, that's how it works. That's how you do it. So you can go to any environment. You don't have to have the tech. You just have this pair. So you just go,
no, actually.
So this hasn't been in anybody else's ear.
No. Put this in your ear. Yeah. Oh, wait, you can't understand me? No, put this in your ear. You have to learn, put this in your ear in multiple languages.
So, of course, that's not what it does. But, the secondary, it says the pilot comes with a secondary earpiece for wireless streaming music or to share with the person you are speaking with.
Oh, cool, cool. Okay.
Yeah. Anyways, well, we've all had that experience where somebody's speaking to us and or we're speaking to them and we know they don't fully understand the language and they just give us that nod.
Yes.
So now that nod is going to go on for like a few seconds and then they're going to get a smile as they understand what we said.
That's right.
Yeah. Awesome. It's, you know, it's this to me seems like it's going to be there before the self-driving car. Even though it seems crazy, you know, language is a finite, mostly finite. Mm-hmm. Set of variables, you know, for each language. So there's a lot of subtlety and stuff, but, you know, overall, when you look at the billions so and billions saying, of stuff.
So you have no problem with us having universal translators. That seems like an easy problem. But driving a car, whoa, baby.
Well, you know.
I love that, like, the kind of the similar argument is like a complete reversal.
I know.
But it's true.
I hear what you're saying, and you're probably right. but, you know. Indiegogo, craziness.
That's awesome.
Universal translators.
I have to say that standalone tech in that situation does make a lot of sense. Because if you're doing, like, you know, relying on a laptop or something, you can't do that while you're traveling. You can't do that while you're, mm-hmm. like, ordering a Danish.
Right.
All right.
Right.
So there's been a lot of talk about bots lately.
Yes.
Yeah. Facebook had their new chatbot API for people to hook into. And then Google I/O was last week, right?
2 weeks ago.
2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. You guys didn't talk about...
We didn't talk a lot about it, no.
No.
Yeah.
But now, what is their new LO chat app includes a Google bot interface as well.
Yeah.
What
do you... And Google really talked a lot about bots and artificial intelligence specifically and being more integrated with artificial intelligence and talked about their new messaging platform, which is amazing. They have another one. Like, come on, seriously.
but here's what I don't get. For some reason, I'm just not understanding what the big hubbub about this is. Yeah.
Well, Siri, for example.
Yeah.
We all like it. It works okay. You can set a timer. That's what I use mine for. Do you use Siri for anything else?
What time is it? What's the weather going to be like? Call my wife.
Yeah.
You know, text my wife. That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, reminders.
I use reminders.
Yeah.
Yeah, and timers, big time. And those are all great. And that works because Apple, you know, bought a company to have that work and integrate it with their product. But the artificial intelligence in the back end to actually understand natural language and then do things is relatively complex. And I think it's getting popular now because, well, Amazon proved that it works in the home market, right? The Amazon Echo has become an extremely popular product and everyone that has one thinks it's great. And so Google is basically kind of capitalizing on that and releasing their, what is it called, Google Home, their little device.
Yeah.
Which isn't actually out yet. I do want to get one of those, though, I think. Because that's what I want to do is have Google listen to every moment of my life.
Yeah.
It is a little bit creepy, obviously.
So the intelligent assistant, you know, spoken interface and these bots are all tied together? I mean...
Yeah, yeah. Well, so the Facebook one, I actually was involved at a hack day at work. We had a presentation at work talking a little bit about bots. And so afterwards, we kind of started thinking about an artificial intelligence engine that would respond to you through texting through Facebook's protocol. And the basic concept of this is that here's the demo that we did. That was you say hello to a bot on Facebook. You add it to, you make it a messenger, you send a message. And you'd say, Brian, you and I are messaging to this bot that's called the Netflix bot. And we say, hi, you know, bot, what movies have Brian and I not seen on Netflix that are good? And so that interface to do that kind of thing through like a UI like I would write at work would be very difficult. You and I would both have to log into our separate accounts, and then we would have to somehow have one of us log into the other person's account, kind of, to then get a conglomeration of titles that both of us haven't watched. That would be, we'd both joy. And that would be really hard for you and I to actually navigate to do that as a user. Like, I'd add you to my account. Like, it'd be complicated. But in the messengers in world, if your account's connected to Facebook and my account's connected to Facebook, and then you chat to the bot then sends the messages to our backend systems, and then we don't have to build a UI for you. We can go, oh, we know the meaning, and then we do a relatively simple database search.
So we've had text-based interfaces for ages, yeah. But what's new here is that there's this context that you can provide that allows you to make sense of the text interface easier.
A big part of this Facebook thing is actually the understanding of intent is built into the system. So instead of me having to figure out how to deal with intent in natural language, which is actually relatively complicated, Facebook does the intent for you. So an example might be, can you pick me up later today? So Facebook's going to go, oh, they want transportation. The pick me up meant transportation. Later today means this date and all that. And it's a question. So now they already have set up to give to the bot person that's going to write it, this person intends for transportation later today. And they're asking a question. And so all of a sudden, this relatively structured form shows up that's relatively simple to write about if you're like Uber or something. Which was the example they had, was Uber at their...
Right, so what Facebook is providing the developer is is doing all the heavy lifting on the language side.
Yeah, and one of the things that Facebook mentioned at their presentation conference was that Messenger has a lot more traffic than their Facebook main app. Messenger is more popular, is used more than Facebook is. So therefore, the growth is in messaging, therefore be in messaging. And all these bots are about using the messaging protocols in a new way. Facebook's also allowing you to put images into the feed so you could actually respond with images, so you can do search queries and things of that nature. So it's exploding because a lot of people are using messaging, and probably more messaging is happening than social. And if you can integrate, how do you integrate? You integrate through text and bots.
Here's the thing. Messaging is used so much because it's so simple. You're just talking to one other person or two other people. All of a sudden you get the bots involved. I don't know if it's going to be so simple.
Well, that's actually kind of the idea. But you know, what's the restaurant reservation service?
OpenTable.
OpenTable. So if Al and I are texting one day, or all three of us are texting in some shared text messaging, using Messenger, right? Mm-hmm. That's Apple provided, or using Slack. And we say, at OpenTable, we should go have a rest. We should meet tonight for at 6 for dinner. So because I included the OpenTable thing, that's the way I include the app. I don't have to do anything else. I have to install their app or anything. All of a sudden, I've sent that message to OpenTable. And OpenTable goes, oh, wait. I know these three people. I know where they live because Facebook Messenger, right? Or whatever messaging service you use. And therefore, at 6 p.m., okay. And it could respond right then in the thread, here are the four restaurants that are open in your area. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a relatively easy query to make. No one had to do it. You just have to set, kind of include OpenTable. So that's why it's exciting, because it's kind of that current frontier, if you will. I'm pretty sold on it, I got to say.
Yeah, I got to see and play with it. It's just a text-based interface to me. It's just so old school. Yeah, which is funny because Alexa and Siri and all these other ones that are out there now, somebody made the analogy that essentially that's what they are, is they're a command line. And
The new thing, the command line, it's back. It's you look at the video games that kids are playing now, and they're more pixelated than, you know, my Atari, you know, was, and they're like loving it. And I look and I go, that doesn't look like, you know, I mean,
it doesn't look like all shiny and you're talking about like Minecraft, right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, a lot of other qualities in it, but you know, in general, you know, what goes around comes around.
It's true.
It's cyclical.
So I played with the API from Facebook, and the intent building thing was really cool. It was really the hard problem. I mean, the Hack Day thing we were dealing with. But, you know, speaking of Hack Day, you guys weren't here last week, so I don't even know if I mentioned I actually won Hack Day at Netflix.
Oh, I heard about this.
Yeah, I love this idea, too.
But I don't think I talked about it on GeekSpeak.
No, you got to share this.
All right, that's cool. Yeah. I'll link. I mean, if I did this last week, I'll be so embarrassed.
No, I don't think you did.
We do Hack Day every once in a while at work, and the thing I decided to do at the last minute was something that my wife and I are always frustrated with. She and I will watch a show together. We'll get excited about a show. And then she'll fall asleep. And I'll keep watching. And the next day I'm like, oh, I watch some more. And she's like, okay. So then she goes on and watches a couple episodes, and she goes ahead of me. And so then I'm like, oh, well, and pretty soon we're not watching together anymore that show because she's too far ahead or whatever. And it's mostly about knowing where the person is. So the very simple hack I did, which got a lot of press, which we wrote it on the tech blog and stuff, is really exciting. You can watch the YouTube video with my girls in it. I'll link to from today's show. Is very simply, whenever you enter in, when you have my hack installed, which, you know, is not public yet, so I'm teasing you all, sorry. you start playing the Netflix application, and normally you have at the bottom, when you're playing a title, you have like a little drag bar, and you can drag it from left to right to play where the playhead is. And now, whenever you watch a title, if you have other members in the family of your profiles that are also watching that show, you actually see where their profile is in the playhead. So it's very easy to see where someone else is watching. And so this is a scenario with me and my wife watching back and forth. I'd open up a show and I would see that her her profile icon was all the way over to the right hand side, which means she already finished this episode, so I can safely watch this episode. And then the next episode comes along, autoplay, you know, continue watching, and all of a sudden her play, you know, her little character is in the middle of the player, so I know I can watch that point and stop and then watch later with her. Mm-hmm. And that was what I implemented in less than 24 hours.
It's really a great idea.
And you know, I just got to figure out how to get it in the app permanently. We normally don't launch features without testing them to make sure they're not they're backwards compatible. But it was really cool, very honorable to have my colleagues vote me as a win, which is kind of fun.
Cool.
Yeah, well, it was a brilliant little idea. I love it.
Awesome. Well, if I can get it working, if I can sneak it into the app, I'll make sure to put you in the test.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, that's right. And Lyle loses the job. Okay. Al, we haven't, first let me just mention that this is Geek Speak, and we're sponsored by nobody in particular. I already talked about our Patreon. You're welcome to chip in some dough. If you actually want to advertise on our program, if you think that our audience might like what you do and you'd like to advertise on our program, please do let us know. We will, if we agree with you, we will we'll throw you in the hopper. We have somewhere between 2,000 and 4,000 weekly subscribers to the show, and of course we're interested in increasing that. But do let us know if you're interested. And I had a great conversation with some people who are doing some podcast researching in this field, and I am doing a little bit more looking to this, but we'll speak of that further. I kind of feel like I should lead in with this of...
Yeah, right. Well, you could. But if you did, then it would set off my little special app here. This is kind of an interesting thing. It's called OneScream. I found it on onescream.com. It's doesn't seem to be completely available yet, but the idea behind the app is that if you scream a panic scream, it will actually activate and send a message to police. Now, what you have to do?
Whoa! Your app's always listening to you, and if you scream in panic, the police get called.
You need two screams in a row. So if you're being attacked, remember to scream twice.
I always do.
And it has to be like a panic scream. It can't just be like a fake scream. It's got to be like, you know, like a real like.
Do you train it with your voice?
You know, it doesn't say that in here, but I bet you they do have a little setup thing
that
does
that. Here's a scenario where you're training. You go into the store. Mm-hmm. You have to get trained at the store.
Yeah.
You go into the store and yeah. They ask you to take you down a long hallway.
Right.
And then halfway through, they open the door with a machete guy and jump out.
Jump.
Big, and they're like, okay, scream one, register.
Hockey mask.
We'll pick up scream two tonight at midnight in your home.
They say when the alarm
that can't be reliable.
They say when the alarm is activated, the phone will vibrate. You will hear a loud siren. The lights of your phone will flash. You will have 12 seconds to cancel the alarm before the police are notified.
Oh, good! I'm glad it has the cancel
feature.
That's
actually kind of an amazingly cool idea.
But you know, I've always thought I wish I had some one button to do something.
Oh, you know? A big red button.
Yeah, big red. Like if I needed to, like, I don't know,
scream.
Well, if you needed to just like if somebody came up to you and.
Like the alarm button in your keychain for your remote control for your car, right?
Yeah.
There's a button there.
Yeah.
You ever use that?
No.
Hmm.
Okay. We're all fathers, right? We all have kids.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when our kids were
born... Some more than others.
and when our kids were born, I'm going to ignore that.
Well, I have three kids. You only have two.
That's not... Okay. You're editing this out. You know, everybody's got advice, and you read all the parenting books. And then I remember reading this book that was all about the five or four different cries of my baby and what each one meant. And it was the author was very clear. These different cries have a distinct, discernible sound that you can use to determine whether it's, you know, diapers or food or... No, I never could figure this out. I mean, I can tell when my son is screaming because he's really hurt or because he's just messing around, but...
But not five of them.
No, I couldn't...
That's not, you do know two different sounds. We've been sitting together and you're like, no, he's okay. I mean, you still get up and go...
There's
you know,
no way I can make a computer understand that.
I don't know there's any way that you could standardize or normalize those cries. You know your kids cry,
right?
And I know my kids cry, but you know, I mean, we don't know each other's kids' cries. You know, hey, you know, Gavin's crying. I don't know whether he might be hurt or he might be joking.
You know how I knew what that cry meant?
What?
I looked at my watch to see when the last time I gave the bottle was, and I know that's the right time.
So he trained you?
No, I had it all timed.
Yeah,
but you think? Do you think this thing will work?
It's in beta. So they're not even sure it works.
Oh, so wait. Yeah. So how do you test this?
I don't know. Well, I think you hand it out to people. Did it work?
What is the scariest city we could test this in?
I know. I mean, the idea of this kind of thing, the panic button.
No,
it makes sense. Without having to like touch it, you could just scream twice. I don't know.
So that has to be an Android-only device because Apple wouldn't give the API for that.
Well, it's an Apple device. I mean, it's an Apple thing.
There's only one problem.
Is it hardware?
Didn't you hear that...
Isn't it hardware?
I heard that Siri was...
yes, they're making an API for it.
And doing an API.
Rumor.
I wasn't sure if it was a rumor or if it was
I heard it, and independently,
we both heard it.
We're in Silicon Valley. We heard it.
But I didn't mention it earlier because I don't think it's true. I don't know if it's true.
Well, I mean, it's going around. People are talking about it.
Is it working?
It's probably one single source that said this rumor. I don't know.
Well, why is it we all know it independently?
Well, we'll find out like next week, right?
Right, exactly.
Because the WWC... Are you going to WWC?
No. Yeah, I'm going to try to go up there for a couple days.
Right. Don't scream.
Really?
I'm looking down the list of stories to go to, and I see that there is Al stories.
Oh, yeah.
I want to put Brian back on the spot.
Okay. You can try me.
Okay.
Go for it. You're up.
What? No, not even a lead in?
Well, we could talk about your...
Graham crackers.
Good. We could talk about your machine in front of you that has a secondary power supply. I mean, second hard drive. But I think we've talked about that before.
Yeah. You've mentioned that before. You know, I actually heard some other geeks talking about how they've got drives strapped to the back of their machines. You know what profession they were?
Video editors.
Exactly.
Yes. You know, Ben's done that for years.
He has.
Ben Jaffe.
You know when he used to do that a lot? When he was a full-time video editor.
Oh, yeah.
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 See, the problem is I do everything, so I just can't keep to one drive.
Yeah. Yeah. So the reason I'm mentioning this is that Brian's computer has Velcro tape to it, and he also has a hard drive that has Velcro tape to it, and so he has a hard drive Velcro to the back of his laptop.
Yeah. The conspicuous part is the orange wire. Don't cut it.
It's Thunderbolt.
Yeah.
Are you booted from that drive right now?
No. Okay. It's just...
I don't think you can.
Back and forth?
Now, I do have my home folder on there, my account. My personal account does not work when I
you can
that
you can
attached.
Move your user folder to an external.
Yeah, they were going to make that a feature, and they could never figure it out.
I did not know you could do that.
Yeah,
we were just talking about that today.
Oh, this would solve Al's problem.
This would totally solve Al's problem. Yeah. That's kind of what I suggested. Right. But the problem is there are no tools to do it. You just have to make a hard link, right?
No. You can go into
symbolic link or something.
You can go into users and groups and change the actual path to the file.
You can actually. You know about the advanced features and system preferences on a Mac. If you go to System Preferences and the Users and you hold down the Option key, you will see another button.
Uh-huh. Right.
I don't know if that's true, but I think that's true.
Yeah.
And I think you can do this kind of change there.
It's a right-click on your username.
No, right-click on your username.
Oh.
So you could theoretically change the path on that. You could also make a hard link. You know.
So just so the listeners understand what we're talking about, you've been dealing with some photo problems, right?
Yeah.
So you moved your photos to another drive, but now, did we confirm this? Your drive's filling up again, right? Drive's
stabilizing.
Yeah, it's stabilizing now.
I think this whole story is for another show.
Okay,
we'll talk about that. We have a special treat on this, so.
Yeah.
That'll be a how-to episode.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyways, yes, I have my home folder on another drive. So.
And does that work pretty well for you?
It does, until I forget that the drive's not connected and I try to log in and everything just goes kablooey.
Yeah, then it really fails badly.
Yeah, I have to shut the thing down.
All right. Saffron Al?
Yeah, Saffron. It's an app. This was a...
I thought it was a flavor or a spice.
It is. And I think I know why they call it that now that I think about it. I was trying this out as one of the crazy ideas that were out there, and I thought maybe I'd talk about it. This would be coming out. But then I look, and it's available. What it is you take a picture of somebody wearing an outfit, and then you take that picture, and then you kind of circle around the thing that you're interested in, and then it does a search for an article of clothing that matches that type of clothing.
Does it work?
Well, I just did it to Brian's hat, and I got some pretty amazing... I got one that was this like giant furry thing.
Yeah, that was not my hat. Yeah. I do not have a giant furry thing sitting on my head.
No, he's just wearing a baseball hat. But a lot of the hats did kind of match, but given my picture, it's kind of a neat idea.
Yeah.
And they actually have the app out. I did notice that, and then you can buy the articles of clothing. They show them all here. But I did notice, is that in rupees? What is
that? Yeah. What is that? Yeah, rubies.
Rubies. Yeah. So
so it might be hard to buy the hat in US
you
dollars.
You might have to, 1,250 I don't know the translation, but
that's kind of a cool idea. So it's doing an image search and then finding a shopping cart.
After kind of a neat UI, you know. And the thing is there, and it did work. And
it's called Saffron.
Saffron, yeah.
Saffron, cool. All right, let's talk about roach glue, shall we?
Well,
first off, I was destroying a building today. We luckily don't have a lot of cockroaches where I am. We have squirrels. Mm-hmm. Squirrels.
Man. They just, when you open the kitchen in the morning, they just run all over the floor and stuff.
I don't have them in my house. This building was like an old sauna that used to be made from long time ago at the pool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so I was ripping all these panels and tearing it down today and took the roof off. I wanted to save the roof, so I cut that free with a Sawzall, and I'm working by myself on a ladder. And the whole building's kind of shaky, and I'm up there, and I pop off the first redwood redwood panel that's like an old redwood board that's strapped to the outside to kind of protect it, whatever. And I'm up on a ladder kind of precariously, and I have bad experience with ladder, as
yes.
you know.
Yes.
And I popped the board off, and a bat flew out almost at my face in the middle of the day and flew away.
Man.
Scared me. So I go to the time-lapse footage to see if I have the bat on film, and all I have is me looking totally normal, and then me looking very surprised, and looking off in the distance.
Two frames.
No sign of the bat, unfortunately. He was very fast. That's pretty funny. He was very fast.
You know, we had the problem with the bats flying in our house several nights in a row.
How'd they get in?
We don't know, but we
live in a log cabin.
I know. But we read that if you have it like more than once, it's obviously there's an infestation of bats in your house.
Okay.
So we did the whole thing. We got the bat out of the house three nights in a row, and then it never came back. So
maybe there's only three bats.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, with cockroaches, I've told, if you see one cockroaches, for every cockroach you see, there's 1,000.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, this company, here's a story I just ran across on this on geek.com. Japanese scientists have created roach glue so strong it can catch a human.
is it made of roaches?
No, it's a glue to catch roaches. And what they've said is that, and they ended up to test this, they made a giant roach trap that's 929 times the normal size of a regular cockroach. And they rounded up some test subjects to see how well their new mega glue worked.
Did they put it on like down on the ground and had people try to run through it?
The three subjects were the scientist himself who did it, a sprinter, and a sumo wrestler. This was done in Japan, by the way. So,
and it was filmed, obviously. They can get
sumo wrestlers, yeah. And every single one of them, they tried to run across it, couldn't make it. You know, they get, you know.
I mean,
it's a very odd thing. It's very strong roach glue.
Sure.
You're going to catch roaches, and you can also catch humans, I guess. Yeah.
That's great.
Yep.
I would assume that you could catch a lot of cockroaches from it, too, if it's that big.
Yeah.
It'd be hard to live in your living room, though, with a big sheet across the floor. Okay, Al. I know you don't have a crazy USB of the week, but this is a crazy USB of the week.
Oh.
So you could definitely tell us about it.
Oh, yes. It's
a YouTube video. So people can watch this YouTube video. We'll have it up at geekspeak.org. Yes. So we'll have that up for today's show.
Where did I? Yeah. You can turn, you can take a USB cable, and it's a little YouTube video that shows you how to turn the USB cable into a fan. So
just the cable?
Just the cable. The cable comes out of your USB, of your computer, and then you can put a little motor on there and put the little propeller that turns it into a fan. It's a YouTube video. Very weird. Nice.
Makes sense. I mean, you have to buy the fan and the propeller.
Very tiny.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, you know, maybe just...
It's cool. Hacking your stuff.
Cool off one of your fingers.
That. Hey, you know that GeekSpeak is a registered service mark of David Lawrence and is used with permission, and GeekSpeak is Creative Commons Attribution 3.0, so you can use this stuff any way you like it. Just let us know, the geeks. Let them know the geeks said hi. Thanks to our intern, Chandler, and our support geek, Greg Merkley, who provided this week's working title, 20,000 iPod Screams in All Caps. Pretty good. Pretty good title. I like that. Theme song, of course, is by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. And thank you all for being here for episode 22 of our 16th season.
You know what else was in all caps?
What's that?
My Apple II. Before I got the 6080 column card, it was all caps.
It was all caps.
Yeah, it was screaming at me every day I used that thing.
Absolutely. Brian, Al, thank you for being here today.
Thank you very much.
Yes, you're welcome.